I was 34 when I realized that my integrity had a specific line item market value. It wasn't a promotion or a bonus. It was a number on a thick cream-colored document titled Separation Agreement and General Release. They pushed it across a mahogany table in a room that smelled of expensive espresso and cowardice. They didn't look at my face. They looked at the space just above my shoulder, as if I were already a ghost haunting the office I had helped build. The lead partner, a man named Arthur, whose English accent was as polished as his silver cufflinks, cleared his throat and told me that this was for the best, for everyone, especially for me. He said the word generous 3 times in 2 minutes, but I knew what that money was. It wasn't a golden parachute. It was a gag, a down payment on my silence. They wanted to buy the memory of what I'd seen in the upstairs filing room, and they wanted to buy it before the sun went down. The firm was one of those heritage agencies in London where lineage mattered more than logic. I had spent 6 years climbing that ladder, ruining my posture and my social life for the privilege of sitting in those meetings. For a long time, I believed the lie that we were a family. I believed that when Arthur patted me on the back, it was fatherly pride, not a way to check if I was still compliant. The culture was built on a series of whispered understandings. You didn't mention the way the senior directors looked at the interns, and you certainly didn't mention where the missing budget for the charity gala actually went. We all lived in a state of perpetual polite looking away. It was a professional ecosystem held together by starch and secrets. I was good at it. I was the one who smoothed things over. I was the one who translated their outbursts into professional emails. I was the reliable, invisible glue. Until the night I stayed late to finish the quarterly audit and found the folder that wasn't supposed to exist. It wasn't a dramatic discovery. There were no sirens, no flashing lights, just a series of wire transfers and signatures that didn't add up. It was a systematic siphoning of client funds into a private holding company registered in the Caymans, signed off by the very men who preached ethics in every keynote speech. I remember sitting there in the dark office, the only sound being the hum of the vending machine, feeling a cold, hollow weight settle in my chest. I thought about the clients. I thought about the junior staff whose bonuses had been cut to save costs. Most of all, I thought about the way Arthur had looked me in the eye that morning and complained about the rising cost of office supplies. The betrayal wasn't just the money. It was the absolute, casual ease with which they lied. They weren't even trying to hide it well. They just assumed no one would ever look, or that if someone did, they would be smart enough to keep their mouth shut. I made the mistake of thinking I could fix it from the inside. I thought if I brought it to the board, if I showed them the proof, the family would police its own. I walked into Arthur's office the next morning with the folder. I remember how the light hit the dust motes in the air. He didn't even look surprised. He just sighed. A long, weary sound, like a parent dealing with a difficult child. He told me I was being emotional. He told me I didn't understand the complexities of international finance. And then, the tone shifted. The warmth vanished. He told me that a career is a very fragile thing, and that London is a very small city for someone with a reputation for being difficult. That was the first warning shot. By the afternoon, my access to the server was revoked. By the following morning, I was sitting in that soundproofed room with the cream-colored document and the generous offer. The figure was high. It was enough to live on for 2 years without working. It was enough to make the anger go away. If I was the kind of person who could be bought. They sat there. 3 men in tailored suits, waiting for me to sign my life into a non-disclosure agreement that would legally forbid me from ever mentioning their names again. They were offering me a clean exit. And a glowing reference in exchange for my soul. I looked at the pen. I looked at Arthur. He smiled then. A small, tight movement of the lips that didn't reach his eyes. He thought he had won. He thought everyone had a price. And based on the history of that firm, he was usually right. He started talking about my future. About how this would allow me to pursue other interests with a significant cushion. He was already writing the narrative of my departure. I was the tired employee who needed a break. I wasn't the whistleblower. I was just another line item to be settled. I didn't pick up the pen, I stood up, left the folder on the table, and walked out. I didn't say a word. I didn't scream. I just left. The silence in that room was absolute. It was the most powerful thing I had ever done. And it was also the most terrifying. Because the moment I walked through those glass doors, I knew the machinery would start turning against me. I knew the phone calls that would be made. I knew that my reference would now be a series of coded warnings to any other firm that might hire me. I learned that day that a woman's voice has a very high price tag when it threatens the status quo. But the cost of keeping that voice is even higher. I lost my career. I lost my standing in the industry. I spent months being ghosted by recruiters who had praised me weeks before. They burned my reputation to protect their ledge. Now, I sit in a different kind of office. It's smaller, louder, and the furniture is cheap. But when I look in the mirror, I don't see a ghost. I see someone who refused to be a line item. They still have their mahogany tables and their espresso machines, and they probably have a new version of me sitting in that room right now, smoothing over their messes. They think they bought their safety, but they didn't buy me. Every time I tell this story, every time I warn another woman about the generous offers that come with a gag, I'm spending the money they thought would keep me quiet. They offered me a price for my silence, and I decided it wasn't nearly enough. My voice wasn't for sale, but the lesson I learned has a value that survives long after their bank accounts are empty. The exit agreement wasn't an end. It was the moment I realized that if they are willing to pay that much to keep you quiet, you probably have something very important to say.